It has been a minute.
It's been so long that we can't really class this as a continue. Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, we're doing it's kind of a reboot of sorts, isn't it? But
soft reboot?
I don't know. I was trying to segue into like...
Nothing's changed. It's like, it could have been, we could have recorded this a week after the last one.
Noises.
Yeah, it shows up on my record.
I love lamp.
Wait, did you think that it was just going to cut out you saying loud noises?
Loud noises!
You just mute Ollie.
Just confuse the algorithm.
I want to confuse the algorithm. Fuck AI.
Speaking of noises, noises though.
Fuck the artificial intelligence.
Ollie. Uh-oh. Ollie.
Yeah.
Lean back. Lean back and then lean forward. He's not got the chair anymore.
But
I wish we were recording what was happening on screen, right?
Probably his recording of it, not what we're hearing through Zoom, but his.
Nah, I'm looking at this.
No, he's got a new chair. He was telling me he's got a new chair that doesn't squeak. So all the squeaking in here is probably mine because you're on the bed.
Yeah. Well, that can squeak too.
Well, not. I've heard about such things, but not on there.
You went so red then.
I'm not yet wed, so I wouldn't know.
So the old chair died in an accident.
Yeah.
Were
you on camera when it happened?
No.
Why do I remember it as if I was there?
You sent us photos.
I sent you photos. It was okay. Like, oh my god, it was like a disaster at the time because like I was just sat here for my breakfast. I had a glass of orange squash.
Yeah.
Or something like that. God. I had my laptop everywhere. On. I was watching Netflix or something like that. And then just suddenly, like, the chair just, like, collapsed forward. I dragged my laptop down. Brand new laptop, by the way. Water went everywhere. And then the PlayStation
laptop as well.
Just fell out as well. And it was just like, what the fuck is happening?
I was just like, you paint quite the picture. I think you must have told me before, and that's why I feel like I was there.
It was just
I feel like I've seen that happen, but I don't. Yeah,
everything was like going. Everything was fine, but like, apart from the chair. The chair was fucked, but like everything else was. Everything else.
What a great start.
The expensive technology was fine.
Right. Well,
I don't know. I didn't really want to have to explain it to my insurance thing. I had my phone nicked. That was. Thing that's happened since the last podcast. But
it's all coming out now. Yeah. It's like therapy.
This is like therapy because, like, you know, I haven't seen you guys for a while. But it's been like, I have seen you since then, haven't I? So
we were in Dublin less than a month ago. Was it a month ago?
The Emerald Isle to come.
The
and see
Emerald
me.
Isle. We went to go and see Mason in his Republican paradise that he lives in.
I mean, well, since you guys have been here, I think it's rained almost every day.
Hmm.
I mean, a little bit, but it hasn't been. It was one a year.
It was fucking one a year. I left a pair of jeans over there that I've got to go claim back at some point.
Ollie, you left half of your suitcase here.
Whereas I left a deodorant can intentionally, it has to be said. So I wouldn't.
I don't know how I left that pair of jeans because I was quite thorough. Oh, I thought I was being thorough in the morning.
No. How do you just forget a pair? They were on the sofa as well. That's the thing.
But I must have just I don't know.
Just didn't open your eyes.
Yeah.
I'm still
partially blind, you know, like these glasses.
It was a weird afternoon.
There was socks as well. I think there's something else.
There's one sock.
I've got an Ollie pile.
There's an Ollie pile.
In the top of my wardrobe.
You
so
should put a little photo in front of
say,
it. So it's like you're trying to summon him. Put him in a circle and then put a photo
in
the middle.
Well, I've got his Ollie pillow that would do. I should probably put that.
Yeah, it's all part of the merchandising scheme that we've got going on. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's all that merch that nobody wants.
Yeah, if you want to go, it's like 35p on Amazon at the moment.
There'll be a thing that goes there, right? So, I haven't even started editing the other thing yet because I've been so busy. But we have a special best of thing in the works. For our 50th episode, it may be out before this, probably not. This will probably come out first.
I guess this is our 50th.
This will be, well, no, because if we're actually counting ones in release order, this is probably like 56, because remember all the Doctor Who ones and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So the final of the RSP as it was, which we'll say is the official 50, even though it isn't the 50, you know what I mean?
Okay.
The special, yeah.
It will be a special where it will have some of our favourite moments in it, which, let's be honest, mostly surround Ollie. But I do have the clips. Just need to put them into a timeline. I'm just laughing at them. The one where he loses his mind, particularly, and we have to talk him down like he's King Kong, like he's smashing up a city, and we're there like next to the police with a megaphone going, Ollie, everything's going to be fine.
Standard Tuesday.
But this is a roundabout way of saying that we're going to have a go at a new format today. Not really a competition format. It's more that we want to make things a bit more topical. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
More of a magazine format.
Well, the main problem we've had is like I'm the only one that really goes to see every film
that is true
on the planet. So it sort of becomes a bit of like I'm just randomly talking about what I saw in the cinema last week, and Alex talks about Star Trek for a bit, and Mason,
and I just moan.
Yeah.
And then brings
which
up,
is
and
fine.
Then, okay,
has
and
its
then
place.
Brings up his
has
occasionally, and then he brings up occasionally really good music album takes.
Mason is I'm the cool one of the group.
Yeah.
I was watching the young ones the other day, and I realised that Mason is very much the Mike of us if we were the young ones.
Yeah.
But I can't decide which one's which of us. I don't know if Ollie's Rick and I'm Vivian. Guy, Rick, you're a complete bastard.
I think that's something I need to do. I need to catch up on like classic British comedy because I still haven't seen the young ones. I haven't seen the young ones. I haven't seen Only Fools and Horses. I haven't seen Forty Tales. I haven't seen Blackadder.
Jesus Christ.
I haven't seen... name some others that I haven't probably seen.
Hello.
I haven't seen Hello. I haven't seen Hello.
We based a whole episode of this off Hello.
I haven't seen Dad's Army. I saw a couple of Dad's Armies, but
Dad's Army's great. A couple of Dad's Armies. They were having a fight on the football pitch. But my point I was trying to make is we're going to start bringing topics every week. We've got a list for the whole year, which is a hell of a lot of planning for us.
Because we sort of just fell into the review.
We did. It's fine. It's fine. It's just it doesn't differentiate as much from anybody else. And actually, we weren't really...
Yeah.
We were having fun. But it was...
We just need a bit of a format. Just having it's just a bit more us having a natter, really. Because that's where we're best
at. Rather than a big list of films that Ollie has seen and me and Alex just chime in.
Yeah, and then once every 3 or 4 months when I can afford a video game, I then talk for a bit. But no. So quite fittingly, the subject this week is going to be about reboots and our favourite reboots. I don't think we've agreed on an order that we're going to go, but have you two done your homework?
We've also not really said... Yeah, we haven't done much prep, have we, or...
No, I've got
a Google Doc that's got like 3 lines on it.
I've got 5.
I mean, I've got like reboots that I've enjoyed.
I thought we were only picking one.
No, it's the thing. I thought we might be picking one, but if you guys had the ones that
I just thought we would have a general natter about reboots in general. And
well, Well, the reasoning for this was because this is a reboot, obviously. Other ones will be more connected with things coming out that month. We sat in I can't remember the name of the bar. It was like a cafe bar in Dublin that did a lovely cooked breakfast. What was it called? The breakfast. It had a special name.
Very Extra Breakfast.
Something like that. Yeah, it was really nice. And me and Ollie went back there the next day. Next to a church on the Liffey.
Yeah.
Yes. So you've both got stuff to bring up. I've got one or two things to mention then.
Got a feeling what you're going to say.
I'm so happy you said that. Ollie, it's customary for you to go first on the other one, so I wonder if we should carry on with that custom.
Okay. No, I think we should change it.
Yeah, let's change it.
Oh, do you want to do it? Do you want to go first?
Yeah.
All right. He's being forceful, everybody.
The first one that comes to mind for best reboots is probably... Well, there's a few of them in this series. James Bond has been known to reboot a few times with each new actor that comes into the role. I guess GoldenEye was quite a big change But obviously, I think everyone since Casino Royale came out just blew that out of the water. And the fact that it's from the same director also blows my mind. Martin Campbell did both of those.
It is astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know if he'll do the next reboot, but...
Maybe
it
is.
Why not?
If it ain't broke, you know.
If it ain't broke.
We just come back to Martin Campbell. Martin, we need to change up Bond again.
he's like, I keep trying to get out and they pulls me back in.
Yeah. But...
yeah. I would say with Bond, if I may.
Yeah.
I feel like the first real reboot was probably the first Dalton one. Because up until that point, it felt like it was just a long line where they just changed the actor. Whereas Dalton, you were like, oh, this actually is a different feel.
Yeah.
And then GoldenEye and then Casino Royale, as you say.
I mean, it's been a while since I've seen Living Daylights, but I'm pretty sure... No, apart from... What's his name? Who plays Q? Desmond.
Yeah, Desmond Miles. Desmond Miles? No, Desmond... It's Desmond Miles. That's because I've been playing Assassin's Creed. That's why I've got Desmond Miles in my head.
Yeah, apart from him, I think the entire cast was changed up.
More or less, yeah.
But then with... he was still Q in GoldenEye. And then with Casino Royale, the only carry-on character was Judi Dench's M. So, but it was still a completely different... new sort of feel for what a Bond film could be. And I think there's an argument that could be said after that it sort of slumped back into its old habits, but I mean I don't think they could do that again with this next one. They're gonna have to try it all differently again. A lot of people say they might take it back to basics and like maybe set it
in the 60s or something.
Probably
yeah.
be the easier route. Or just
like
more
make
interesting
a Cold War
route.
Thing again, maybe.
Yeah, I think maybe. So. Since GoldenEye, it's always had a question about its relevancy. Mm. And
I would quite
you know,
be
it
interested
keeps,
to see.
It keeps going back down to its cheesy roots.
Yeah.
Because it has an audience for it.
Because
that,
people
as well
complain
as people,
about it when it isn't,
you know,
though, does it?
Yeah. People want change, but also if you change it too much, then you might be losing the fan base a bit.
Yeah.
And they want those tropes in there, so it's tough, but they seem to always do it.
Yeah, I think Mission Impossible kinds of shows that you can still do that high... like concept.
Hang on, let me just check out how long it took us. Wait a minute. 20 minutes exactly to mention Mission Impossible. Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
Were you actually tired?
No. I was just in my mind. I was like Mission Impossible is going to make an appearance.
I was
in
just
this.
Like praying about how like Mission Impossible is like one of those sort of proof of concepts that you can take that high concept sort of version of a spy thriller and apply to today's modern sort of taste, etc. I think
but that's what people said about the Daniel Craig era, is that a lot of people complained that it was just trying to be Jason Bourne sort of feel, which
well,
I don't
quite Quantum of Solace more so, I think.
Well, someone ruined Skyfall for me a couple of weeks ago when they said it was I was watching some video essay or other where it was saying that The Dark Knight was so popular and the twist was so good in it that people just kept doing The Dark Knight over and over again, and then it showed a bunch of them and it showed Skyfall, which it really is, where he pretends to be captured so that he can do all the sort of, and I went
that trope is sort of
and I'd never even considered that, but it was
I think Marvel has done it a gazillion times. I can't
That was it. The Avengers.
Yeah, the Avengers did it. Yeah, that was like during that thing. And there
I brought
that
up Marvel
thing where...
before Ollie in this reboot. Then you didn't see that coming.
That's crazy.
You didn't see that coming.
I know. And then
subverting your expectations.
Yeah.
There was that blue light in the sky thing that Hollywood blockbusters are doing for a while, which I'm quite glad they've gotten rid of at the moment. But now it's all multiverses, which is like. The trend.
Who the fuck's fault's that, innit? I'd say Bond
Rick
is a
Morty,
great
actually.
Pick for this. Yeah. Great. Bond's a great pick for this because I sort of like, whether it's intentionally done or unintentionally done, the fact that that theory that Bond is just a name that's passed down hasn't been outright disavowed yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you could argue that it has sort of been disavowed, but it's sort of, there's enough there where you can still go, you know, the fact that Judi Dench talks to two different Bonds
yeah.
at different periods of history, the fact that Q was in between the two reboot, you know, yeah. all that. Mm. It's sort of, and like, I don't know how true it ended up being. That rumour that went around that they tried to get Sean Connery to play the old guy at Skyfall. Was that true or was that just
true? Yeah, it was true, yeah. And you could tell the way it's that character is written that it was seems like, oh, it's kind of like a old guy, like,
in Scotland kind of showed as well.
A new guy yeah. the rope.
That would have been so cool, though, if it was, because even though if they just carried it on, he was called Kincaid and it was all that, you'd go, wait.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. What's going on here?
Whenever I rewatch Skyfall, I can always tell it was meant to be like an older Bond sort.
Yes.
Because the way it's written and his dialogue.
See, I wish they had. Just and not called him another Bond, not told you, but just enough for you to go.
Enough for
It wouldn't have changed what the film was. It just would have been Sean Connery in the role of Kincaid instead of that. I can't remember.
Because he turns up in the Aston Martin, if he'd have just gone, I'd recognise the car at the gate. Something like that, you know. Is she in one piece? But no, I like Bond as a pick for that. Because it is perpetually trying to, stay relevant. Yeah. I think stay successfully. Relevant. I'm cutting you off.
No, I'm just agreeing. And I'm staring at a crane outside my window and just thinking of the parkour scene.
The bit where he throws the gun at him. So possibly good. My favourite. Isn't famously the guy who he's chasing in that is the guy who more or less invented parkour?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool, though, that you got to do it on in something like that as well.
Yeah.
Because people who watch that now still say that's a great chase.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Because he's... I like that the gadgets aren't as silly in the Craig era. They are intentionally in No Time to Die because obviously it's a celebration.
Mm. Yeah,
but
yeah,
like sort of. I remember Charlie Higson, who used to write for the Fast Show, and wrote the young James Bond novels. He was on the Chris Evans Breakfast Show years ago. And I think it was just after Skyfall came out. And they said, oh, what do you think of Daniel Craig as Bond? And he said he didn't really like it because it didn't feel like proper Bond. Because it never had that moment where, you know, the music does where he does something, ooh, Bondy, like, ooh, sort of cheesy. Right. Which I think is bullshit because he does that, especially in Skyfall, the bit where he jumps on the train and then does his cufflink, you know.
I imagine it's kind of, everyone's got a different interpretation of what a proper Bond is. Because, like, everyone can easily say that Adam West is a proper Batman. Like, in terms of, like, because that was what people grew up with in the 60s, and it's like, oh, that's Batman.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, but every Batman's, like, very tonally and contrastly quite different, like, as soon as they've got some more darker tones, you got the realism, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting on that. But Bond's very much, like, people... I think everyone says their first Bond is their favourite Bond, I think,
It's interesting that, because Brosnan was very much my first Bond, but I think Craig is my favourite.
Hmm.
Yeah. I just find good in all of them. I think they all bring something to it.
I even like Lazenby for like what he brings to it. I mean, I think I prefer the film more than his performance. But
I'd say it's a great film.
Yeah.
And he's good in it, but I think it's not like how bad some of the Roger Moore ones are, but Roger Moore is eminently likable in it anyway, you know, that kind of thing. We're like, this is garbage, but I'm enjoying Roger Moore.
I mean, On Her Majesty's Secret Service is kind of like the first attempt to really try add a bit more depth to the Bond series, and as a good sort of, can add a bit more layer and like gravitas and like a bit more sadness to the character overall, and I think that's why it was that era.
There's a scene in, I think it's The Spy Who Loved Me, because I watched it fairly recently with my dad, it was on telly, and there's a bit where, is she called Triple X, the Russian agent starts listing off all of his attributes, and then she's like making fun of his sort of shagger lifestyle. I can't think of a proper word. But and then she like Liz says, multiple conquests, married once. And then Roger Moore does this great thing where he's clearly upset that his wife's been mentioned.
Yeah.
Like he goes, okay, you've made your point. And it's one of those really moments where he goes, there's a lot of depth. Like it shows that it is a front with the Roger Moore character.
They carried that through his...
Yeah, like, but it's just a wonderful second where he's like, yeah, okay, you didn't really need to mention that. That's not very nice, you know.
Yeah.
And I've always like, yeah, the depth that the actors bring. It's like what we say about the doctors, isn't it? There's no bad doctors. It's just the writers that sort of...
I was going to bring up the doctors in a second, actually.
Sorry. spoiler warning.
Well, what can I say? It's Casino Royale is... I think it's standing the test of time.
Is that the one you're going to pick, Casino Royale?
Yeah. I mean, I do like GoldenEye, probably equally.
15.
I don't think either of them are like my favourite Bond film.
17 years, 18 years maybe?
Yeah, but in terms of reboot, in terms of what they
God, Casino Royale came out more than half my life ago. That's insane.
It's crazy, yeah.
Stylistically it's just the opening in black and white and then, you know, just him getting his 007.
The music.
Yeah. Music was great. It's also quite scary in parts, I think. Especially like during when they have that break in the casino, during the actual
and the fight
game,
in the
stairwell.
Yeah.
It's
David Arnold's score for Casino Royale is my favorite of them.
One of the great underrated composers, David Arnold, for me. I think he is.
Yeah, I got to see it at the Royal Albert Hall.
I'll bet you did.
Last year, that was really good.
Here we go.
Welcome, Martini. Chicken or stirred?
Do I look like I give a damn?
Anyway, Ollie, I feel like you may have accidentally, or I may have accidentally tipped people off with what you were going to talk about.
I was.
This is interesting because it means we're all talking about different things, which I'm very happy about.
Yes, I was going to bring up Doctor Who, which has sort of rebooted a couple of times, you could say, in the last few years, but properly in terms of, as we know it, rebooted in 2005 with Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper, with the episode Rose.
New Who, as they call it.
New Who, as they call it. New and, Who. Yeah, I've sort of picked it as it's the... I owe a lot to that series in terms of, like, friendships I've had over the years and just, like, just fun
He's talking
stories
about us.
And stuff like that. Like, it's not just you guys.
Well,
but, like,
I do remember,
but, like,
I do recall that the first... Go on,
But, yeah, I remember, like, I've had loads of friendships I've started like going like, oh, what's your favourite Doctor Who episode? And like, usually just go through like all these factors of New Who, and everyone's got a different favourite Doctor and episode, and it's one of those, the beautiful thing about that series is that everyone's just got a completely different taste in what their favourite Doctor Who is, and
True.
Doctor Who caters to all of those
tastes.
There's
a lot for conversation.
Yeah, it was an introduction to horror, it was an introduction to sort of more adult themes. Like, I think it helped our generation a little bit. Like, obviously, if you look back on the 2005 series, there's certain elements that are a bit more dated, but obviously, in terms of LGBT representation in children's television,
yes,
that was like,
she just called him gay when he doesn't like being slapped. I do recall that.
Yeah, it was kind of,
but
there's a couple of things, but like, a couple of things that are dated like that, but in terms
of they're sat on the roof just after Jackie slapped Eccleston. He says, "She slapped me really hard." He goes, "Oh, she goes, oh, you're so gay."
Yeah. But Doctor Who.
It's just before the ship comes in. Sorry, Ollie. It's just before the ship comes in and crashes into Big Ben. Like literally immediately before that.
Oh, I don't. Think
Go on, Ollie. Sorry.
But yeah, Doctor Who's always had that sort of effect, and I think it's like the people that I know that are fans of Doctor Who, they generally a bit more. Tend to be a bit more light tolerant sort of type of people, so I don't know if that's a thing I could just like, they're a bit more open minded, if you get what I mean. Like, if you get what I mean.
I think it's an excellent bridge between, because I've said this about you before, Ollie, that there's a difference between me and you in terms of pop culture upbringing, is that I don't know how true it is of everybody, but I feel like people who grew up on superheroes have a slightly different view of the world as people who, for example, grew up on Star Trek. Where superheroes are a lot more individualist. This is a proper, like, pound shop reading of it. a lot more individualist, whereas, like, Star Trek's a lot more collectivist, sort of not true at all, really, when you actually analyse it. I think, though, but to between those two sort of philosophies, Doctor Who sort of bridges it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like a meeting space in the middle where he's sort of a superhero but sort of has the ethics of Star Trek and sort of... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see that.
I do remember the first time I worked with you guys. Do you remember the first time we actually worked together, not professionally, but on the film, what the first thing we did was?
No.
So I met you all. I've met you all before, anyway.
Board after Ollie broke it.
That did also happen. I think this is the first time. Anyway, I think it was first and second time. One of the first times is I came into the room in the library, and you were writing, but you couldn't figure out how to get the sound to work on the screen, and I did it immediately. And Ollie went, "Oh my god!" Probably like Morpheus, like he's beginning to believe. but then the other time, which I think was the first time, was Bryony. I think Bryony got Becca to make me do this. But she said, "We need people to do these auditions. Can you get Alex to go and sit with..." I think it was either Ollie and Ed or Ollie and you, Mason.
Auditions?
I can't remember. But it was auditions for actors for The Fantastic. And it
I remember being there.
It was in the main building. And it was like nobody turned up. And it was quiet, like awkward silence for a minute. And Ollie went, "Right. Rankings, best episode of Doctor Who, go to me."
Yeah, I remember that.
yeah. So it is genuinely, it was the first thing we all sort of talked about. Because other than that, the first time I talked to Ollie was, as we've mentioned many times before, was at at Becca's party, where he sat down next to me and went, "So, have you seen Interstellar?" Yeah.
Which is like 2014, anyway, so next year will be 10 years that you've known me, which is...
Oh my gosh.
Dressed as a snooker player with a drawn-on moustache.
I'll send you my therapist's bill. Ollie, go on anyway. Yeah, Doctor Who.
Well, it's also a franchise. It's a series of consistent reboots. It's always about consistently changing and evolutionizing and going back on itself and going like, okay, well, we can change the dynamic of that and like go like... If you look at what the show was in 2005 to what the show is now, it's completely... Actually, ironically, yeah. It's going back to
yeah, well, yeah. I
would say even there was reboots during Tennant's era. I'd say the first series of Tennant was so different. Like the Martha years were so similar to Rose, but then when it got to the Donna sort of bits and afterwards, I think it was a sort of reboot in itself.
I think that's why it's gone on. So you've got 12 full series plus specials and stuff like that, but you've managed to keep the interest for... I mean, I know a lot of people have fallen off of it and stuff like that, but you've managed to keep the interest of me for about...
But it's sort of part of the furniture. It's always there.
It's just become part of the furniture, but like it keeps itself fresh enough each time with the... Like even halfway through Capaldi's tenure with Series 10, they call the first episode of Series 10 the pilot, because Stephen Moffat wanted it to kind of be a rejuvenation, re-pump of the Doctor Who series.
Which is interesting, because it was. I think, I often direct people, if they want to watch an episode of Doctor Who, I usually go, watch that one episode, because it encapsulates everything sort of that I like about the show. But at the same time, it was it, because I tried to do that with my friend Sage, who you've all met now. And she was like, "Oh, can we watch it from the beginning?" I was like, "Okay, we'll watch it from Eccleston." She went, "No, from the beginning." I was like, "Whoa, hang on. There's quite a lot.
Start with Eccleston.
I'm not dissuading you from watching the older stuff, because there's some phenomenal stuff back then as well.
I think there is some good stuff back then, but I've never been as connected to it, if you get what I mean. In terms of, I could watch the Tom Baker, I really love the Genesis of the Dalek storyline with Tom Baker. I think that's fantastic, and I think he's great in it. But obviously, it's quite... I mean, I enjoy it in an ironic sense in terms of, seeing... Because, some things, the effects are... I mean, I've been rewatching some of the Eccleston ones, and the effects have dated a bit, but the writing still elevates it enough for me.
I'd say the writing of the Eccleston ones has aged better than a lot of the Tennant ones. A lot of the Tennant ones feel... The early Tennant ones feel more dated than Eccleston's ones.
Yeah.
Because I think he played that character as such a very obviously shaken veteran of a war that we didn't know anything about yet. He did it... It's aged so well because now we know about the war that he fought in and what it looked like. He actually fits it even better.
Yeah,
and what he believed he did, and it turned out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because the bit at the end of that series, I rewatched his series, and the bit at the end of that series where he can wipe out all the Daleks, but it will kill everyone, and he says, and he goes, "Are you a coward or a killer?" And he says, "I'm a coward." He's like, "I can't do it again. Yeah. I've done it once. I can't do this again." Even though he didn't do it the first time, it turns out.
Yeah. And now we're about to enter a new era of Doctor Who again, with the sort of Whoniverse, which Russell is sort of building. I think we've sort of heard rumours of like bringing back more of the spin-off sort of era.
Thanks,
where
Disney.
Like we used to have with.
Yeah, I've got a kajillion pounds
like
now.
But now we're bringing back like old. They're connecting it more with the older era as well. We're getting castings like Bonnie Wright and stuff like that is coming into Doctor Who. And
is Bonnie Wright?
Yeah, Bonnie Wright. Did you not see it on the? Yeah, Bonnie.
Oh
Wright
God! Teenage me is thrilled.
There was a thing with her and Shooty Gatwa on a scooter riding through.
Hang on, let me Google Bonnie Wright Doctor Who now. I've got to see what she looks like. You can keep talking while I'm talking.
But yeah, it's been like...
Wait, Bonnie Wright is Ginny Weasley from Harry Potter.
Wait, am I...
Yeah.
Bonnie Langford. That was a
one. Oh, Bonnie Langford. That's why I was confused. That's why I was like, teenage me was Langford.
Like, that was it, Bonnie. Right. I'm getting my bonnies in a
bundle. Oh, right. See, now it makes sense.
He's getting his bonnies in a bundle.
He's got his redhead bonnies confused. Okay, cool. Bonnie Langford. Right, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Like, Bonnie Wright? That's weird.
Bonnie Wright. I
love her, but Christ can... Yeah. Yeah, I hope she's done some acting lessons. Anyway.
Yeah, so Bonnie
Blatt. Teenage me is going, "Oh, just like her for her acting."
But that's...
No, the money they have now to inject into it...
Yeah, we're now getting the free specials this year. We've got the 60th anniversary, which pains me to think that the 50th anniversary was 10 years ago, because it feels like it was 5 minutes ago.
Yes.
I remember being
at
Odeon.
We went to the cinema for
that.
Yeah,
me and you went to the cinema to see it in Odeon.
Did you? Like, I watched it in the Junction in Lincoln.
In 3D, it was great. And the pre-shows are great, because like, they had Strax come on.
I've seen them. Yes. Do not cheat your food too lightly, worthless humans, or whatever it is. I
love that. I loved all that, and Murray Gold's coming back to do some of the music for it, which would be cool, because I feel like the music's been sort of lacking with...
do you know, it's a shame, because he was really good at the I've forgotten his name. Segun Akinola, was that his name?
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah, he was great in the first series of Jodie's. You know, if you go back, there's a lot of great sort of synth stuff going on there.
He was good.
Just nothing more from that, yeah.
It just felt, it lost themes. It just felt lacking for me. Just didn't have any. There was some scenes.
It's such
where
a waste of
Jodie
Whittaker, that series. The whole.
He's just playing this ethereal.
Yeah.
It's because that was a bit of a reboot in itself with Jodie Whittaker and stuff like that, and it felt newer. And then it just sort of devolved into like trying to. It fell a little bit flatter.
It's one of those shows that it does need a lot of elements together to really resonate and really be memorable. And the problem there
it's sort of rebooted with each
the direction, the
incoming
writing.
Showrunner. And,
but I think everyone's getting a big buzz, but with Shooty Gatwa and Russell T. Davies.
I think it's going to be the shot in the arm that the series needs. I think it's going to be good. I think we've got Russell T. Davies, since Doctor Who, his tenure has written some great series. Like he's written years.
He's gotten.
And years.
He does have a certain cheese to a lot of his stuff, though. I have to say, in a sort of good, which is great for Doctor Who. But I watched what was it called? The one with the Emma Thompson
years and
dictator.
Years.
Years and Years. I watched that, and the end of that, I was like, "This is a bit." Forced sort of mawkishness where they're all sort of running into the concentration camps and opening them. Like up until that point, it built such a level of dread where you're like, where's this going? Like that the bit I always quote is one of my favourite bits of writing and acting is the bit in Turn Left where they're sending all the foreigners out of the little village that they're living in. And they're sending them to labour camps, and it's because England for the English. And then there's a bit where Bernard Cribbins goes, "Labour camps is what they called them last time," and then he starts crying. I was like, "Fucking hell!"
Yeah.
Like it's really sort of it. Really, he doesn't. That's one thing I'll say for Davies is he doesn't hide from what he's trying to say.
No,
Like it's a very that one line of Bernard Cribbins sort of crying, sort of recognizing that fascism is happening is one of the great acting moments. And I miss Cribbins. I wish he was back for this one. He's dead.
Well, he's.
Oh, is he in it? Oh, he's such a good character. It was the best character of all that.
He's in the 60th.
Good. That's going to be heartbreaking when it happens.
Yeah, so he's about this. So we're looking forward to that. So it'll be going back to the old and then all in with the new, I think, with Doctor Who. And I think that's what keeps the show alive and well. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the new era brings, because I think it's been an important part of my life. And I hope it to continue to carry on with that way.
Hope it goes on.
Yes.
Very good. Doctor Who is another jolly good suggestion.
Where are we?
Well, we're basically in the middle of a war. No, but it's a war zone. And this is just your basic skirmish. And it's not as bad as it sounds. I promise you. Come on.
I've got friends here. Old friends.
Say friends.
The Doctor is detected. Seek, locate, destroy.
I can't imagine what you're going to bring to this.
I must put this out there. We've not scripted this.
It just happened, did it, Alex? So it just happened this way.
One of my things I'm worried. No, what you're saying. Oh. I haven't fed him lines.
No, I can just.
One of the things that makes me laugh about this is, I was worried about when we changed to this. This format that it would drift similar to one of my shows I listen to at the minute, which is called the Best Games Ever podcast, wherein Tom Ori every single week brings Football Manager, which is a brilliant joke. I hope he keeps doing it for the rest of the time they're making that podcast. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny, as I was looking at what we've got, if every single week I said, wow, reboots that really mean a lot to me, Battlestar Galactica. However, complete left turn. Wolfenstein: The New Order.
No.
No, what?
Now.
It's a game.
I'm worried about this because neither of you have played it, there isn't really much to talk about, sadly.
You might get back.
We got
a film series, a TV series, and now we got a game.
I know. So. I genuinely thought that when you said Doctor Who. It's like we've planned it. It's like we planned this, okay. But no.
It's like we planned it, but we haven't.
No.
So I talked about it on the old format before, but. For those who don't know, Wolfenstein is one of the original first-person shooters. Like, I think it's probably second after Doom, which was the same company. But a first-person shooter where you try and escape from a castle. Well, one was called Escape from Castle Wolfenstein. You shot up a castle full of Nazis. At the end, you fought Hitler, who was in a mecha suit. That's how serious they took the Second World War. Anyway, Wolfenstein: The New Order came out. Oh, God, I need to check what year it was. Excuse me a moment. Talk about yourselves. Wolfenstein: The New Order.
I just realised that you can hear me slightly through the headphones, so I might have to block that out. Hopefully you'll be able to block that out in the audio. But
what is it?
I'm sure it'll be fine.
I can't hear it.
Be right.
So.
Wolfenstein: The New Order came out in 2014. So again, another thing that's approaching 10 years ago, which makes me deeply, deeply unhappy, Ollie. I only played it relatively recently, but it's this. To understand why I've picked this, you have to understand the sort of. If you played games back then, you must understand that first-person shooters were becoming a bit of a joke, because they were all crap. It was sort of later era Call of Duty. It was your Battlefields coming out once a year, and they were all just kind of garbage. Like, they were fine, but he's going to cringe when I say this. It's like the Marvel thing of there's so much coming out that you're like, oh, that's a thing now. Secret Wars, great. I'm sure everybody's going to be talking about that. That kind of thing. Like, there's every Call of Duty from that era nobody remembers. And then it was like, oh, we're bringing back Wolfenstein. And everyone was like, why? why are we doing this? Why? This is such a dead series. The one before it was garbage. Like Indiana Jones, sort of like, oh, magic Nazis, sort of weird rubbish. The famous, YouTuber slash critic Yahtzee Croshaw was so bored with how generic it was, he He reviewed it entirely in limerick form, which is a great video, by the way, if you want to go and watch that. Wolfenstein the New
Wolfenstein,
Order.
Like the first ever? Like, was the first Wolfenstein?
No,
like
I think
ever,
I
like,
think Doom was the first. I think Doom was the first, and I think Wolfenstein came not long after it. I remember at the time as well when they said they were rebooting Wolfenstein. One of the people that complained was this, I can't remember his name, the game designer who was working on Epic Mickey. I don't know if you remember that game. And everyone was like, sorry, you're upset about someone rebooting something and you're making a game about Mickey Mouse. Wolfenstein the New Order is interesting because it opens up with something that I would usually hate, which is something I hate about Ad Astra. I've got that mention in. A gruff-voiced man going, I just can't, you know, whenever I close my eyes, I just think of, you know, that kind of thing. And it opens with that. But then the first mission you play is a last-ditch attempt by the Allies to win the Second World War in 1946. So they've actually gone from sort of speculative fiction to the world is different. Like, already with that, you go, well, that's not right. That's not right at all. As we find out later on in the game, the Nazis discovered a cache of technology by a secret group called the Dat Yishud, which I don't know if it's said that they are a Jewish organization or if they found the technology. I can't actually remember if they built it or if it's like alien technology, whatever. But the Nazis have used this special technology. They drove back D-Day. That's the point of divergence. They managed to push D-Day back into the water. And now the Allies, because they've expended so much on that, they've fallen apart. The mission that you're doing falls apart quite badly to the point where... And there's a weird, shitty thing where you have to pick a path, like a Mass Effect. It was just post-Mass Effect where everybody was mad on which path will you choose. But in Wolfenstein, it made no difference at all. It just meant you had one character or the other. And you have to choose whether or not the evil bad guy who's called Totenkopf, which is Death's Head... whether or not he will kill the young man who's the young rifleman or your friend Rufus, who's the old Scotsman who's like, you should kill me, I've had my time, but he's better to keep around because he's a better... And his accent does sound like that. I'm not putting on a bad accent. I don't know who they got to act it, but it's a bad Scottish accent. That doesn't change anything other than the fact that Rufus or this kid whose name I clearly never picked, so I can't remember his name, is in it. Later on, but it goes badly wrong. You get a chunk of metal in your head, and then you miss 20 years. You're in a coma for 20 years, you're looked after for 20 years, and in that time, the Nazis have completely changed the world. They've taken over, they've won. The planet is now theirs, and their technology has gone through the roof and all that. And it's the rest of the game is basically you trying to lead a resistance movement in a completely dire situation. There almost is a send-up of sort of like first-person shooters where you play the Superman because you are playing a incredibly buff, incredibly powerful tank and you can't do anything because they've already won, you know? And it's, I think it was very brave of them to do that. And in an era where, I remember at the time when not many people end up watching this in the end, but The Man in the High Castle, which I loved the first few series of, ended like garbage, I'm sorry to say. I had a terrible ending to it. Which I think is one of our subjects later on in the year, isn't it? Bad endings or good endings, maybe. Yeah. It's a shame because neither of you have played it, but it's one of those games where it's all the way through. Like even like there's a bit where you've got the resistance, and you sort of go, okay, which one of these is going to do the double cross? And like you get one who's like really arsey with you, and you go, it's going to be him. It's going to be that one, or it's going to be the one that really likes you. But then. As it goes on, you realise, no, they're all just exhausted sort of anti-fascists that have been forced to live in a sewer to hide from the Nazis. And it's sort of, it's like there's one at the very beginning who's a Brit with a really bad sort of Dick Van Dyke accent. And it's sort of he's going to betray you. He's going to betray us. He's going to betray us. And he's in the first mission and he takes you to London, which has been completely... There's a cool thing in it where they couldn't suppress London, the Nazis. They just couldn't stop it from rioting and trying to rise up. So they built what can only be described as a massive steampunk Nazi tripod from War of the Worlds, which just goes around London, leveling anybody that tries to attack.
Wow.
It's called the London Monitor. It's an amazing thing to behold. But the guy that you think is going to double-cross you lets you out of the car, and then he... without telling any of you, has put explosives in the car and does a suicide run on the Nazis because he's had enough of living in this world. And he just goes and kills. And it's one of those things you go, oh, fuck, I was wrong. You know, it sounds really dark and dire, and it is, but it's like...
It's got a bit of a sense last, of humor to it.
And the message of the end is... It's like, you know, the Andor thing of the, as long as there's people trying, then there may be a better future in there. And there's a bit where you're dying at the end of it. Not spoiler warning, because he's in the next one, but there's a bit where you think you're dying. It plays like he's dead at the end of this one. Like, it has such a perfect ending. And he sees his lover, the nurse that nursed him back to health, who he becomes his partner. And she's leading refugees onto the boat, and she's holding up a flare, like the Statue of Liberty almost, like waving them over. And he reads out the new Colossus, which is the poem, the give me your tired, your... Was it your, you know, yearning to be free? That thing that's written on the Statue of Liberty, and it's such a great, perfect ending. Which then I don't hate the next one because it's. I think its highs are even better. The next one, it's just that the lows are much lower and it's a bit of a mess. And it's even called the New Colossus, which is the name of the poem that's read at the end of it. But it's one of those things that's. I won't pretend it's as good as Andor. Because it isn't. But the, you know, the message of Andor is, it doesn't matter as long as you're trying.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, what it says, the what message I want you to take is try. Even if it's in vain, try. Because it's, what is it? The thing in Andor is, it's oppression is such a shaky, tyranny is such a shaky structure. That's why they have to impose it on you. Because actually, it's unnatural. It's unnatural in the natural world. That doesn't exist. So... The natural need to be a bit free is there. And in I guess I'll go on to the second one as well. The second one, they go to America, and it's like, I remember when they said this, the Bethesda marketed, I think it must have been 2016, 2017, because it was during the former president. And the KKK are openly working with the Nazis, you know, that kind of thing. And Bethesda put the poster up with "Make America Nazi Free Again," and this is when people started going, "Wow, I didn't know we were being political." It was like, "What, that game where you hunt down and kill Nazis? That one?"
Yeah,
but
anti-Nazi is a public opinion, like a real controversial.
It's a very popular opinion that, for some reason, is considered a niche one. But in I won't go too deep into what the second one is like, but the second one is, by this point, cause like you steal a U-boat in the first one that has nuclear missiles on it, and you sort of go, oh shit, you can actually do some liberating with this. Like, you actually could do some damage with it. But it's like, in the first one, you go to a Nazi moon base. That exists. But it makes sense with the technology, because it's set in the 60s, and if they've got special alien technology, then you would be able to have gotten to the moon like the Americans got to the moon in 69. So it's like, it's believable. In the second one, for some reason, they have a Venus, a city on Venus. I'm like, well, hang on, they haven't built that in 30 years. Sorry, that's not... You can't build a bit of city on Earth in 30 years.
You can't even build a
block of flattened. Yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't make sense. But that's the thing, like, they have this special kind of concrete that they use. I can't remember the name of it, but it's like... that they built all their stuff with, but it starts crumbling because it's made in concentration camps. And there's a bit where you go to a concentration camp to liberate a professor who knows all this stuff, and he's been sabotaging it from the inside. So it's sort of like he knows that he's going to die in this concentration camp, but he knows that their concrete structures are going to start falling apart in 20 years. It's that little bit of resistance, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Like everyday resistance, rather than, you know, you don't have to blow up a Death Star. You can just the act of not doing, you know, and that's what I like about it. The end of the second one is a very different theme, where they've started a revolution in America, and it ends with it's like a thrash metal version of "We're Not Going to Take It" by Twisted Sister, which is very different from the theme of the end of the first one, where it's like, I think the second one would have been better if you'd have played as. I've forgotten her name now, but his lover, the lady, the nurse, if you played as her in the second one, or as someone else, and actually BJ Blazkowicz, who's been this character, arguably the first, apart from the Doom guy, the first person shooter character, the one that Master Chief is based on, the one that Captain Price is based on, if he died at the end of the reboot to pass on, I think, not in a Han Solo sort of way, he's died destroying this Nazi base as he would like to have gone.
Didn't they do
That's
a
how he would have liked to have gone.
With the daughters or something like that, I can't remember.
Yes, I've genuinely never played it because it's set, so like I said, I don't want to ruin too much, but it's like I say, by the end of the second one, they've started a new American Revolution, because the idea is if they can free America, then they have the industrial might to free the rest of the world. They go to start with Britain and all that. The one with the two daughters takes place 20 years after that. So it's like they've already liberated Britain and bits of France. And you sort of go, I would like to have played that bit. Mm. That feels like a bit I'd have enjoyed, you know. Yeah, it's far from perfect, but Wolfenstein: The New Order, I think, is one of my favourite reboots, just because I played it thinking it was during the last administration, let's put it that way, and it was like, I'll feel good if I'm playing a stupid buff tank with a machine gun gunning down Nazis, and actually the whole time you're feeling like, even like the buff tank is like going, what's the point of it all, you know, I'm still going. And then he's like, he looks at other people who are doing little acts of it and says, I've got to do it for them. He's falling apart because he's a veteran of the Second World War, and it's 1969, and he's sort of, you know, the second one is sort of, it crosses into the 70s, so it's sort of disco era, what should be the disco era but isn't, because of because of obviously the Nazis. But I love it, and that's my recommendation, but that's my choice for this.
That's your choice.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's a shame. It's only after we were talking about your twos that I was like, I should have probably picked something that you've both done.
A mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. Come here, you're tired. You're poor. Your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these. The homeless. Tempest-tossed. To me.
Oliver! Okay, do you have a recommendation, sir?
He's got to think. I've got one.
I had one, and it's already left my head. do you want to go, Mason?
Yeah.
Or should we go in the order that we... Should we wait for him?
Should we keep it within theme? Or do we keep it...
Just because this can be our magazine bit of... This can be the smaller bit of what we used to do.
This can be the bit like, oh, what are we up to?
Mason, in this moment go.
What I've been watching. I have finally got around to watching Peaky Blinders.
Oh, okay.
And I'm loving it. I haven't finished it yet. I kind of sped through the first three seasons, and then I needed a bit of a break. Then I've almost finished season four. I've got two more seasons to go. Each season sort of brings a slightly different theme and plot thread to it all, whilst continuing what's come before. But it's just a great cast of talent. You got Cillian Murphy, which I think up until now, like, yeah, he's a great actor. You see him in a lot of things, but I just can't think of anything else that I've seen him in where he's really been able to shine, like just lead a whole thing by
himself. He's always been a good supporting player, but never like
he's always been a supporting or just in. I was just thinking the other day, he's in like one scene in Tron Legacy. Because they're talking at the minute, they're talking about a new Tron film coming out. Still with bloody.
He's always been good in Nolan films, but he's never been like a lead in a Nolan film.
Yeah. Like in Dunkirk and stuff. He's just.
He's sort of like another Michael Caine for that, isn't he?
Yeah.
Now Michael Caine gets given small but really good roles in Nolan films.
And now watching Peaky Blinders is just. Mm. He's just so good at it. And now I'm quite compelled to see Oppenheimer. Eating my own words, but no, he's fantastic. Helen McCrory?
Narcissa Malfoy, formerly.
Who plays Polly. She's amazing in it.
That's strange.
I forget a lot of actors' names in it, but if Sam Neill was in the first two seasons, and
of course he is.
He was a joy.
They get Sam Neill in for the first series of a lot of things. He's in the first series of The Tudors as well.
Tom Hardy reappears every now and then.
Does he?
he's
Anya Taylor-Joy shows up, doesn't she, at some point?
Yes, I think that was one of her early things. As far as I'm aware.
I haven't seen her yet. Yeah. I haven't seen her.
Oh,
yet.
You'll spot her. You'll see the eyes, and you'll go, ah.
But no, I think I did know she was in it at some point. At the minute, Adrian Brody is the big bad of season 4, and it's quite. He plays an American Italian, a guy from the
Adrian Brody's
mob, who's coming in to kill the Shelby family. But there's so many great. I mean, you see it in other things like Godfather or Scarface, or like with mobs and stuff. And it's just a new form of that. And it's just it can get quite gory and quite dark in places, but it's quite well written. And it looks great. It's for a BBC show. It's in quite a gloomy Birmingham from the 1920s. It can look really cinematic and just it's a good show.
It's nice for most of the world to know that Birmingham exists now.
Yeah,
it's quite popular abroad, isn't it?
I think they do tours and everything now.
There's not many places you can't. Everywhere in London, there's like some sort of Peaky Blinders kind of merchandise. It's got as much merchandise in London as flipping Harry Potter, which is like saying something.
They go to London and Camden a lot in the show, and it's probably around that way where I have those things, but. Yeah, it's a great show. I can't believe it's taken me this long to
actually sit down and watch it.
But yeah. I thought you guys already had.
No, it's one of those shows my dad's watched it. I haven't.
See, exactly. Yeah. I think everyone's dad has watched it.
Yeah.
Not many people.
There's just so many shows. It's like one of those things.
It was a similar thing for me with Line of Duty, where family were talking about it, then people at work were talking about it. It's like, okay, I should just get into it.
I need to watch the rest of Line of Duty. I've watched the first four series of that. I haven't watched the fifth and sixth series.
Couldn't do it, you know. I just couldn't get past the first series. I was like, this is too miserable for me.
It picks up.
I get why it's good and the great actors, but I was just like, it's the amount of times that if you ever watch something with the police in it, and then it's always like the story is X girl was raped and or murdered. I'm like, okay, I sort of get this. Like, even I think I got as far as the fact that it was like, obviously her daughter's murdered, raped and murdered. Oh, no, raped and then killed herself.
You're on about.
Should put a trigger warning before
that's
that because that's a lot of words.
About.
Am I talking about Happy Valley?
Yeah, that's Happy Valley.
I'm talking about Happy Valley. Sorry, Line of Duty. I've never watched.
Happy.
Carry on. Yeah. No.
Like I said,
that was an old man moment. I apologise.
I was gonna say this part was like this isn't Line of Duty, this is Happy Valley.
But it does make me think about, you know, so many people out there who don't think the BBC is worth like paying the TV license for or anything like that.
And yes,
they do come up with shows like this that people just don't stop talking about or recognize.
Oh yeah, they have amazing television.
Yeah, they can.
It's a hell of a debate to have, the BBC one.
Yeah, I don't think we've got the time.
It's the quality you can churn out when you have at your beck and call. Yeah. Mm. It's a thing that I always got in Victoria is I got a lot of people to always be going, oh, there's only like 10 actors in Britain because they're always on, like all the ones from Harry Potter end up in Doctor Who, end up in Game of Thrones, I'm like, yeah, but that's because like, a lot of them are good.
There's nothing wrong with actors appearing in other things.
There is that intrinsic, if you want to go into it, which they weren't, but if you go into the intrinsic fact that actually there's a deeply unfair class divide in acting in the United Kingdom, then that's a different conversation to have entirely.
I think we're going
to
have that conversation a lot more now with what's going on with SAG stuff.
Absolutely.
That is in support of the lower end of actors, because it's interesting, because like, The successful actors, like the ones we all know about, that's 1% of actors. Like the rest of it.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. There's also the fact that it's like, this is a hell of a thing to bring up this late in the podcast, yeah. Sorry. But like the amount of black British actors that go over to America because they're just not getting the parts over here, which includes your Idris Elbas, your Daniel Kaluuyas, your Daniel... Incidentally, I watched the Hot Ones with him on it, and they said, are you more remembered for, in Britain, are you more remembered for Black Panther or Parking Pataweo? And he looked at him like, I'm going to fucking kill you. He's like, I can't believe you've just told the American audience that exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yes. Peaky Blinders.
Okay, I've got a recommendation. Give it a
watch. It's definitely on my radar of things that I might watch.
Yeah, I'll definitely. my recommendation is a film. It's on Netflix. It's called Nimona. It's an animated film that was originally being made with Blue Sky Studios, the former studio that was under 20th Century Fox. They were responsible for films like Ice Age,
Ice Age 2,
Snoopy movie, Ice Age 2, Ice Age 4, Ice Age 3, 4 or 5, The Meltdown.
That was the fifth one?
But anyway, Blue Sky.
Yeah, the dinosaurs and the Continental Divide, what was it called?
any of the many Ice Age films that came out.
So many Ice Ages.
Anyway, I digress. Blue Sky Studios, they were under Disney. The studio folded, but while they were being folded, they were in the middle of making a film called Nimona, which is based on a comic series about it's sort of set in a sci-fi fantasy mix of, Swords and Dragons and stuff like that, but they've all got smartphones and subways and cityscapes and stuff like that. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like ye old Arthur.
I wasn't expecting to say that.
Knights of the Old Guild and stuff like that, but they can still take a selfie. That sort of vibe of it. And it's about this young... I'm going to say person because it's a they-them character named Nimona, yeah, who can transform into any animal creature at will. Played by Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they sort of have this sort of rebellious nature to them that they want to fuck up society. So they join in with someone else that's hated, who is played by Riz Ahmed. He's this knight who's been ousted for a crime he didn't commit. And she and Nimona then tries to be his sidekick, basically, and they try to clear his name. It's kind of like it's well animated. It's got this sort of cel shaded sort of style to it that once you get into it, it really feels dynamic and it's cool. I love seeing animated films having this sort of renaissance of like, oh, we don't all have to look like Pixar films. We can all look slightly different now, and we can have this embraces
bit
style.
Late to have that realization, but it's a mere 25 years in.
But no, it's just like, it's interesting because like Spider-Verse, that's kind of like
Mason's face did what my brain did. When did we get on Spider-Verse?
We sort of had a bit of a watershed moment with animation in terms of like we had Snow White, then 60 odd years later we have Toy Story, and then we have Spider-Verse. Those are like, I call them the three pillars of like genre defying.
I see what you're trying, what you mean, is as in the fact that it's made people realize you don't need to, like you say, you don't have to do Pixar.
Yeah.
Because that's what one of the things with Spider-Verse was, people were going, I mean, it just looks, nothing looks like this. I mean, obviously, loads of shit looks like it now because everything's trying to ape it, but.
Well, no, because it's not actually, because I'd say, I digress, because it kind of shows that people can go like, oh, we don't have to stick to a style. Even. I know you guys were saying about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing, but that actually looks very different. Like, when you look, compare and contrast,
it does look very different.
They look very completely...
It looks like anus.
No, it looks right. Sorry, I've seen clips of it, and like you've seen this scene with the four turtles hanging out, and they just have this...
Can I ask a question about that? Why are people so hung up on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? I watched it as a kid, and I'm like, why do people care so much about this?
It's like
ride or die for 64 Zoo Lane. Imagine that. People are like, come on, 64 Zoo Lane!
Literally, I think it's just because they had a catchy theme tune and they could sell toys of it.
64 Zoo Lane had a very catchy theme tune.
How did it go?
64 Zoo Lane.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is that it?
You don't know 64 Zoo Lane? Well, that's going over the credits.
They're good. Anyway, back to my earlier point, Nimona.
Yeah, go on, Nimona.
yeah, it's beautiful, really touching story. Netflix picked it up to be one of their sort of ever bits of content, but I think they've done well to like have these sort of different animation films. They picked up some films like Mitchell's Vs. the Machines and Vivo.
Wait, I'm only just piecing it together now. You're telling me this isn't on Disney Plus?
No, Disney shut down Blue Sky Studios.
They shut it down, but they
and
didn't.
Then the film was in the middle of it being made.
It's just,
they survived.
It's just out there for anyone to pick up.
No, it was in the middle. It wasn't. It was completely shut down halfway through production, and then
right.
They formed a different studio.
Retreat, regroup, retaliate. That's what they're doing.
They formed a different studio with what they've made of their owner, and they went on to Netflix, and Netflix picked up the production. And
well, now good we have
for them. Paid him a pittance.
And there's like a little reference in to Blue Sky in the background of Nimona saying Blue Sky Forever, etc. But it's an interesting. I really fell in love with it. It was a really good film.
Well, it sounds nice. To be fair, nice. All joking aside, it sounds nice. I struggle with Mike because I was going to recommend something particular, but I'm not sure. At the moment,
you can't say
I've not watched
Star
anything
Galactica.
On. No, I'm not going. Caprica.
Can't
no.
say Star Trek.
No. Well, see, that was the problem. Oh, one of them was Strange New Worlds, so I decided against it.
I'm gonna watch.
I was going to say, but it's people know that I was going to recommend Strange New Worlds anyway. Noah Caldwell-Gervais makes. I don't know. It used to be called Slow TV. I don't know if what it's called when it's on YouTube, but he makes these very long video essays that aren't really video essays. They're travelogues, but they're one of my favourite ones of his years ago was he tried to basically travel everywhere on the western coast of the US that appeared in a Fallout game, sort of see how true to life these areas would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite nice because it's like the same as when we talk about jet lag in the past, jet lag the game, where you see bits of a country you're not used to seeing.
Yeah.
Incidentally, jet lag the game. But anyway, he did that. He's just done a new one. He actually did one for that as well, where it was called Nuclear. Let me see what it was called actually. He does road trips where what's it called? Nuclear Road Trip or something like that. He drove around. Like I say, all of the California, Nevada, and all that. And like, so I went to Vegas to see which bits of Vegas appear in New Vegas and which bits don't. Very interesting because he tells you the history along the way and how it fits in with the sort of the story and how it shows you basically the research that goes into the pre-production of something like this. It's sort of like they didn't just put a building there for any reason. They put a building there because that's a reservation in the Mojave or something like that. And then he did a separate one that was a companion to that where he filmed everything else he'd been doing that was non-Fallout related. So it was just going to visit various bits of the Old West, including the Trinity test site.
Okay.
Which for those Oppenheimer babies coming up, you'll know that in a few months or a few weeks, I guess. He's just released a new one, which was the locations for Fallout 3 and Fallout 3, 4, and 76, which all take place on the east coast of the US. So, like, Fallout 3 is in Washington, D.C., Fallout 4 is in Boston, and Fallout 76 is in Appalachian Mountains around there, West Virginia. And I just, it's one of those things where. And this will make you laugh because the amount of times I've said to you, oh, I don't want to watch that film because it's too long. This, like this, I haven't actually finished it yet because I pick it up as I go along, but the real life, the one that I'm recommending, the real life landscapes of Fallout 3, 4, and 76 is 3 hours and 19 minutes long. That's how long a video it is. Mm. But obviously you can dip in and out of it, but it's very interesting. He's got a very, very nice voice. He's very knowledgeable and he's sort of like relaxed and he's like talking about Boston, the history of Boston, the history. It's like it's made me really want to visit Boston, if anything. But he doesn't need our recommendations because he's got every one of his views has got upwards of 500,000 views on them.
He should be recommending us.
Yeah, but I just think it's more because I'm like pointing people in the right direction. But he's It's just a nice. It's just a nice. I know. I remember. I'm glad about he released this because a few months ago there was a thing went around that says he didn't really have much heart for it anymore, making videos and making content like this because he didn't know what to do. And it was one of those things where I was like, well, I get that. If you feel like you're just doing it to get the money, then it's not really the art that you want it to be anymore. But the new Fallout one he's done is fantastic. But I just, yeah, Noah Caldwell Gervais. There's my recommendation. It's good background, especially if you're doing work as well. It's nice to have in the background because he's just driving along big open American highways and, you know, all that travel stuff that we can't afford. Yes, life is indeed a highway.
Cool.
I'm glad you said that because someone had to say it. Anyway.
Someone had to.
You know, it tells it like it is. He's like one
I
of
don't fuck about with these things, play, you know?
He's one of them comedians that can only play in Great Yarmouth.
He's on the pier every summer.
Yeah. You get him on GB News every now and then to say, well, I don't understand what people are talking about anymore. There's all these genders and all these things. Someone identified as a cat. Anyway.
Good old GB News.
I hope you've enjoyed our lovely reboot. Get it? See, we picked reboots because it's a reboot. We're so...
Like all reboots, it might start off a bit differently, but it'll go back to the same.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Point. I'm just looking at the way Ollie looks at the minute. It looks like you're gazing at him in love across a crowded room.
Always.
Like, you know, the sort of the faded out of the, oh, Dreamweaver, I believe you can get me. anything you'd like to say, boys, before the next one?
Smell you later.
He will follow you to follow a restaurant. You. Probably the cinema. Wait, you're going to promote this, Ollie?
Yeah, I'm going to go.
This is a reboot.
Nice for you to do something, to be honest.
This is a
reboot. It's a brave new world. It's a strange new world.
And on that note,
yes. Peace out. Bye. Go away.
Bye-bye.